Chapter 8, Two Films and Six Snakes. In the spring of 1960 Splunge, John Cleese and Graham Chapman thought they might like to do another television programme. In another part of London, Michael Palin, Terry Jones and Eric Idle, and an American draft dodger, and who can blame him, called Terry Vance Gilliam, thought they would too. Their last show had been a zany, wacky, dappy, dippy, off the wall, over the carpet, through the French windows and into the garden show, which included the splendid Bonzo Dog Doodah Band with his pauntliness Neil Innes. This effort was a children's programme called Do Not Adjust Your Set. Barry Took, an ex-writing partner of Marty Feldman, conceived the notion that perhaps six of us could produce an intercoursingly good show. I was unaware of this at the time, but I have been told that one of the strong reasons for the amalgamation of the two groups was John Cleese's, shall I say, affection for Mikey, as he calls him, Palin. But I know nothing of these things, and he certainly doesn't. This, then, was the beginning of our stretching time. The toad-elevating moment. A horse, a bucket, and a spoon. Sex and violence. Circus, flying circus, Gwen Dibley's flying circus, and eventually Monty Python's flying circus. And now, Python. I remember not being particularly interested in the debate about titles, and wouldn't have minded if the programme had been called Lizard, in that the contents of the programme were more important than the title. Had I given up medicine for trivia such as this? Me. I still like owl stretching time. Of course, it was my idea. Terry Jones. And lots of noises only the Welsh can make. I still like a horse, a bucket and a spoon, his suggestion. J. Cleese, look, you Welsh git, we discarded that about 2 hours ago. Terry Jones, oh, fucking hell, throwing papers to the floor. Aren't we able to talk about things? J. Cleese, yes, but do we have to go on and on about it in such a high-pitched voice? John Cleese guffaws like a barrister having made his point. This winds Terry Jones up to near violence. Of course I go on about it. It's fucking important. J. Cleese patronisingly, Terry, would you or would you not say that the rest of us have already agreed that we don't like it? A heavy glass ashtray is flung across the room, narrowly missing J. Cleese. Characteristic of his temperament, T. Jones calms down instantly, having vented his spleen on inanimate objects. G. Chapman, I still like owl stretching time. M. Palin, no, I've gone off that a bit. I prefer sex and violence. But I do think Terry's got a point about a horse, a bucket and a spoon. J. Cleese, oh, come off it. And so it was decided to call it Monty Python's Flying Circus. The BBC thought it was getting another in a long line of unsuccessful late-night ex-undergraduate satire shows. They were trying to find a successor to That Was the Week That Was, and they still are. We didn't know what we expected to give them until we'd written it, but we knew that we weren't going to give them topical jokes, spoofs on political leaders, or trenchant vignettes about life in Northwest One London. We were fed up with the traditional well-shaped sketch, the beginning, middle, and the inevitable punchline. We wanted to be free to hang on to an idea for just 3 seconds, or a whole half hour if it felt like it. Despite its faults, the BBC hadn't succumbed to timid vapidity in those days, and gave us a series of 13 programmes to do, without demanding to see a script or pilot programme. And, very gradually, they allowed us to do more and more outdoor filming. The style, if there is one, developed because we were the people we are. Ian McNaughton, a tousle-haired, loopy Scottish person, was to be our director. Ethanol was a common bond between Ian and myself, and I also liked his knack of getting things done while surrounded by apparent total chaos. Let's have a drink, Hen, you know what I mean. Jesus Christ, they must grumble, but we'll get twice as much fucking usable film in the can a day as most of these other BBC poonaggers. Don't you think so, Graham? I do. Let's have another. Aye. The meticulous, orderly side of John Cleese's nature, the side that counts how many O, A and S levels and what sort of degree a person has got, as in some way definitive of that person's all-round ability, was uncomfortable with some of Ian's character traits, particularly Ian's friendliness, which made John freeze and resort to schoolmasterly sarcasm. Terry Jones wanted to direct everything that Ian was directing, but Ian was very tolerant, and I feel that Ian never really got enough credit for his part in the creation of Monty Python's Flying Circus. I had a mad year, which I shall never forget, in which I wrote or co-wrote 37 half-hour TV comedy scripts. That may seem a lot, and is, so you'll have to forgive me. There were 13 Python programmes for which I was writing with John Cleese, a series of 13 for Ronnie Corbett, for which I wrote with Barry Cryer, and 11 episodes of Doctor at Large, which I wrote with Bernard McKenna. But of course, The really heroic part is not the sheer number of script, but what Bengalis call quality. There is no English equivalent for this colourful Oriental usage, meaning literally quailness. Quails in Bengal are a great delicacy, so an object of great quality is equal in value to a large number of quails. The nearest English idiom would be good thingness, but that does not quite catch the suggestive essence of the original. Anyway, I will have to leave it to more modest people than myself to deny that all 37 were reasonably good. I went to one office for Barry Cryer in the morning, to another in the afternoon for Bernard McKenna, and then spent the evening writing with John Cleese. Everyone, apart from Barry, thought I was being lazy. It was fun, and I was pissed most of the time. I had to be because of the sheer strain of it. Much of that tightly pissed period is still a binful of blurred memories. The years that followed remain so similarly, which is an excellent excuse for a few disordered snatches. Extremely heavy petting in the back of a taxicab with four Chinese friends, reaching a climax as we drove through Swiss Cottage towards Belsize Park, a mere prelude to a night of neuronic concupiscence. Keith Moon and I went to meet Harry Nilsson at the Mermaid Theatre where Harry's The Point was playing. In the crowded bar, at Harry's request, Keith's minder, Richard, demonstrated his art by kicking a cigarette out of Harry's mouth. You would have missed the action in half an eye blink. I also remember waking up on the floor of the first-class lounge of a Boeing 747 at 35,000 feet, not knowing how I'd got there, where I was going to, or where I'd come from, and not caring. But all that is so much hot air behind the fridge.
"Behind the fridge?" squawks Lady Bracknell.
"Oh, come on," hisses Bernard Palin. "We're still waiting." But my mind is elsewhere.